Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, so you're launching a business, maybe with partners, and wow, it feels like you're juggling 100 things at once, right? Product, sales, hiring. It's a lot.
It really is.
But there's this one decision, kind of foundational, about the legal structure, and honestly, it impacts everything. Your taxes, yeah, but also, like, whether a lawsuit could take your house. Seriously.
That is the cold, hard truth. Get this wrong, especially in the U.S. system, and you could block yourself from raising money later, or even worse, find yourself personally on the hook for debts you thought the business owed.
Right.
So our mission today, give you that strategic roadmap. We're going to guide you through the two sort of traditional choices for businesses with multiple owners, partnerships versus corporations.
Yeah, and we know LLCs, limited liability companies, they're super popular now, kind of a hybrid, tries to give you the best of both. But really, the fundamental choice, especially if you're thinking about series scale or maybe just want ultimate simplicity, it still often boils down to partnership flexibility or corporate protection and fundraising power.
That's the core tension, and that's where we need to focus today, helping you understand that trade-off.
Okay, let's start right there. The absolute defining difference. If someone walks up to you and says, partnership versus corporation, what's a one big thing? What is it?
Separation. Simple as that. Is the business legally separate from the owners? A corporation, it's like a separate legal person. The law views it that way.
Oh, separate entity.
Exactly. It can own stuff, sign contracts, take on debt, all on its own, totally distinct from its owners, the shareholders. And it's built to last. You know, it doesn't just disappear if an owner sells shares or, well, passes away. It has perpetual existence.
Okay, so corporation's separate. And the partnership, then, that's the intertwined model you mentioned.
Precisely. Generally speaking, a partnership isn't a separate legal thing. The business, the partners, they're legally tangled together. And that leads straight to the biggest vulnerability of what's called a general partnership or GP,
Which is?
unlimited personal liability.
Okay, unlimited personal liability. That phrase alone just sounds risky. What does that actually mean for someone, say, who's put their life savings into this venture?
It means if the business can't pay its bills, or if it gets hit with a massive lawsuit and loses, the creditors, the people owed money, they aren't limited to the business's assets. They can come after the partner's personal stuff.
Like my actual house, my retirement fund.
Yes, your house, your savings, your personal car, investments, whatever you own personally,
Yeah.
your risk isn't capped at what you invested. It extends to pretty much everything you have.
Wow. Okay. And you said earlier it gets even worse than that with something called joint and several liability. Can you give us a quick, maybe terrifying example?
Yeah, terrifying is about right. Let's say you and a partner start a general partnership. Your partner's running the day-to-day, makes a huge mistake, racks up a, say, $500,000 debt the business can't cover.
Okay.
The creditor doesn't have to try and get $250,000 from each of you. Nope. They can choose to go after either partner for the full $500,000.
Wait, the whole amount. Even if it wasn't my fault.
The whole amount. If you're the partner with the deeper pockets or the easier-to-seize assets, guess who they're coming after?
You.
You're jointly liable together, but you're also severally liable, meaning individually, for the whole thing.
Man, okay, so even if I'm super careful, my partner's mistake could wipe me out personally. That really highlights why people incorporate for that liability shield.
That's the number one reason, limited liability. As a shareholder in a corporation, your financial risk is capped. It's limited strictly to whatever amount you invested in the company stock.
My personal assets are safe.
They're protected, off limits to business creditors. This is, without doubt, the strongest argument for incorporating, especially if you're in a field with, you know, built-in high risk. Think manufacturing, construction, anything dealing with public safety.
But you hear stories that shield isn't guaranteed, right? This idea of piercing the corporate veil. What's that about? How does that happen?
Ah, yes, the Achilles heel. The law grants this separation, this veil, but if the owners don't respect it themselves, a court can just rip it away. Piercing happens when owners get sloppy with corporate formalities.
Like what kind of formalities?
Things like not holding required meetings, like annual shareholder or board meetings, not keeping proper records, not documenting major decisions. But the big one, the most common one, commingling funds.
Commingling, meaning mixing business money and personal money.
Exactly that. Using the company bank account like it's your personal piggy bank. Paying your rent, buying groceries, personal travel.
Yeah.
If you treat the corporation's money as your own, you're basically telling the world, and potentially a judge, that there is no real separation. And if a court agrees, boom, the veil is pierced. You lose that limited liability protection completely. Creditors can then come right after your personal assets, just like you were a general partner all along.
So the takeaway is, if you incorporate, you absolutely have to run it like a separate entity. Strict bank accounts, proper records, the whole nine yards.
Non-negotiable. Otherwise, why bother incorporating in the first place?
Okay, we've really hammered home that liability difference. It's huge. Now, let's flip back and look closer at partnerships, because the trade-off for taking on that risk has got to be something good, right? And it seems to be simplicity.
Simplicity is the big draw, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Partnerships are, generally, incredibly easy and cheap to set up. A general partnership. Honestly, it can technically be formed just by two or more people agreeing to run a business together for profit, sometimes without even realizing they've done it legally.
Wow, okay. Minimal paperwork.
Often minimal. You should have a written agreement. We'll get to that. But the state filing requirements are often simpler and cheaper than corporations. You're talking maybe hundreds of dollars, not thousands, for the basics.
And that simplicity extends to running the business day to day, too.
It usually does. Management can be very flexible. You don't typically have mandatory board meetings or complex shareholder voting procedures mandated by law like corporations do. Decisions can often be made quickly, usually based on whatever you agreed to in your partnership agreement. It's generally a flatter, more agile structure.
But it's not just the one-size-fits-all general partnership with that scary liability. There are variations, right? Like the limited partnership, the LP.
Right. The LP is structured quite differently. It's designed to have two distinct classes of partners. You must have at least one general partner. This person or entity actually manages the business day to day. And crucially, they retain that full, unlimited personal liability we talked about.
Okay, so someone's still fully on the hook.
Someone has to be. But then you have the limited partners. These folks are essentially passive investors. They contribute capital, money, but they don't participate in management. In return for staying passive, their liability is limited to the amount they invested.
Ah, so that's a structure really built for bringing in money from people who just want to invest, not run things.
Exactly. See, LPs used a lot for investment vehicles, like venture capital funds, private equity, real estate development projects. But, and this is a big but, those limited partners have to stay passive. If they start getting involved in managing the business, making operational decisions,
they risk losing their limited liability.
They absolutely do.
Yeah.
They can be treated like a general partner by a court. Can't have it both ways. Limited risk and control.
Gotcha. Okay, then there's the LLP, Limited Liability Partnership. That sounds similar, but it's different, aimed at professionals.
Yes, LLPs are primarily designed for licensed professionals. Think law firms, accounting firms, medical practices, architects. The key difference in an LLP's liability shield is what it protects against.
How so?
It mainly shields partners from liability arising from another partner's malpractice or professional negligence. So if your law partner gives terrible advice and gets sued, the LLP structure generally protects your personal assets from their mistake.
Okay, that's a big relief if you're in a large practice.
Yeah.
But what about my own mistakes? If I'm the one who messes up.
You're still on the hook personally for your own professional negligence or misconduct. The LLP doesn't shield you from that. It also doesn't typically shield you from general business debts, like office leases or loans, although state laws vary a bit here. It's a specific shield against your partner's professional errors.
Right. Okay, let's talk taxes. This seems to be a major plus point for all these partnership forms.
It is. It's called pass-through taxation, and it's a huge advantage. The partnership itself, whether it's a GP, LP, or LLP, generally pays no income tax at the entity level.
No corporate tax bill?
Correct. Instead, the business files an informational return with the IRS, basically telling them how much money it made or lost. Then, all the profits, losses, deductions, credits, everything gets divided up among the partners according to the partnership agreement.
And then?
Each partner receives a form, a Schedule K-1, showing their share of everything. They then report those numbers on their personal tax returns and pay tax at their individual rate.
So the money's only taxed once?
Only once at the partner level.
Yeah.
This completely avoids that double taxation problem we'll talk about with C corporations. And like you hinted at, if the business has losses, especially early on.
Those losses flow through and can offset my other personal income, like from a job or investments.
Exactly. That can be a significant tax benefit in the startup phase.
Okay. Simple setup, flexible management, pass-through taxes. Sounds pretty good. But there have to be downsides, especially if you're thinking big.
Oh, absolutely. The trade-offs are significant. The number one killer for high-growth ambitions, fundraising. Partnerships simply cannot issue stock.
And stock is how startups raise serious money.
It's the currency of venture capital and angel investment. Professional investors, your VCs, your angels, they almost universally require a company to be a corporation, usually a C corp, before they'll invest. They need shares they can easily value, buy, sell, and potentially take public someday. You just can't do that cleanly with partnership interests.
And just transferring ownership, even without outside investors, is messy.
It can be very messy and create instability. Partnership interests aren't like shares of stock you can just trade on an exchange. Selling your stake often requires the consent of other partners. And legally, depending on the agreement and state law, the departure or addition of a partner might technically dissolve the old partnership and require forming a new one.
Not exactly stable if you're trying to build something long-term or attract investors who want a clear exit path.
Definitely not. That lack of easy transferability and potential instability is a major barrier to scaling.
Which leads us nicely into the structure designed for scale, stability, and attracting that outside capital, the corporation. You mentioned earlier it mandates more structure.
It does. Corporations inherently have, or are expected to have, this clear three-tier governance hierarchy.
Mm.
It separates ownership from management. You've got the shareholders at the top. They're the owners.
Right.
They elect the board of directors. The board provides oversight, sets the strategic direction, hires and fires the top executives.
Okay.
And then the board appoints the officers, CEO, CFO, COO, etc., who actually run the company day to day. This structure provides clear lines of authority and accountability, which is essential for larger, more complex organizations.
Makes sense. Okay, let's tackle the default corporate structure first. The C corporation. This is the big one, the one VCs often want, the one that can go public. But the elephant in the room, taxes.
Double taxation. Yeah, you can't talk C corp without talking double taxation. It's the price you pay for that unlimited potential. Here's how it works. First, the C corporation itself pays corporate income tax on its profits. Currently, the federal rate is a flat 21%.
Okay, tax bait number one.
Right. Then, if the corporation decides to distribute some of its after-tax profits to the shareholders, those distributions are called dividends, and the shareholders have to pay personal income tax on those dividends they receive.
Tax bait number two on the same earnings.
Exactly. The same dollar of profit gets taxed once at the corporate level and then again at the shareholder level.
Ouch. So, given that, why would anyone choose a C corp unless they absolutely had to for, like, VC funding?
Great question. It comes down to unlimited capacity and flexibility in ownership and capital structure. C corp can have literally unlimited numbers of shareholders.
No cap.
No cap. And those shareholders can be anyone or anything. Individuals, other corporations, partnerships, trusts, even foreign investors. This is huge for raising capital broadly. And maybe even more importantly, C corp can issue multiple classes of stock.
What does that mean, multiple classes?
You can have common stock, which usually has voting rights,
mm-hmm.
but you can also issue preferred stock, which might have priority for dividends or liquidation proceeds, but maybe no voting rights. You could have different series within those classes. This flexibility is absolutely critical for sophisticated financing rounds, like those involving VCs who demand specific rights and preferences. If you dream of an IPO, a C corp is pretty much the only path.
Okay, so C corp equals maximum scale, maximum fundraising flexibility, but double tax. Now, what if you want that corporate liability shield, but the double tax just sounds awful, and maybe you don't need infinite shareholders?
Then you look at the S corporation. The S corp is often seen as a clever compromise. It starts life as a regular corporation under state law, so you get that same crucial limited liability shield protecting your personal assets.
Okay, shield is intact.
Shield is intact. But then it makes a special election with the IRS, tells the IRS, hey, tax us like a partnership. So it gets passed through taxation. Profits and losses flow directly to the shareholders' personal returns via that Schedule K-1, just like a partnership.
Best of both worlds. Limited liability A&D pass through taxes.
Sounds like it. Right. But there's a catch. Several big catches, actually. The S corp comes with very strict eligibility requirements.
The fine print. What are the main restrictions?
Okay, first, shareholder limits.
Right.
You can't have more than 100 shareholders. Big hurdle right there for broad ownership or going public.
Okay, 100 max.
Second, shareholder type is restricted. Generally, shareholders must be individuals who are U.S. citizens or residents. Certain types of trusts and estates are allowed, but corporations and partnerships cannot be shareholders, and neither can most non-resident aliens.
So that knocks out foreign investment and investment from other companies.
Mostly, yes. And third, a really big one for funding. S-Corp can only have one class of stock. Everyone gets the same economic rights per share, though differences in voting rights are sometimes okay. This lack of flexibility in stock classes makes it unattractive for VCs who want preferred shares with special rights.
Got it. So S-Corp is good for smaller, closely held businesses that qualify, want the liability shield, and want to avoid double taxation.
Exactly. And it's particularly popular for profitable small businesses, especially service businesses, because of a specific tax advantage related to owner employees.
Oh, right. You mentioned this earlier. How does that work?
Okay, so if you're an owner of an S-Corp and you actively work in the business, the IRS says you must pay yourself a reasonable salary compensation for the work you do. That salary is paid like any employee's wage via W-2.
And it's subject to employment taxes, right? Social Security, Medicare.
Correct. Both the employee and employer share. But here's the key. Any remaining profit the company earns beyond your reasonable salary can be paid out to you as a shareholder distribution. And those distributions are generally not subject to self-employment taxes or those payroll taxes.
Okay. Can you give us a quick numbers example?
Sure. Let's say you're a single owner and your business, structured as a partnership or sole proprietorship, makes $200,000 in profit. That entire $200,000 is subject to self-employment tax, which is currently around 15.3% on a large portion of it.
Okay. Hefty tax.
Now, let's say you structure as an S-Corp, make the same $200,000 profit. You work full-time, so you pay yourself a reasonable salary, let's say $100,000. That $100K is subject to employment taxes. But the other $100,000 in profit, you can take that as a distribution.
And that $100K distribution avoids the 15.3% employment tax?
Generally, yes. So you could potentially save thousands, maybe even over $10,000 in taxes compared to the partnership structure on the same $200,000 profit. Now, reasonable compensation is key here. You can't pay yourself $1 salary and take $199K distribution. The IRS frowns on that. But for profitable businesses, it's a major planning tool.
That makes a lot of sense. Before we move to the decision framework, anything else? What about B Corp? We hear about those sometimes.
Yep. The benefit corporation or B Corp? Briefly, this isn't really a separate tax structure like C or S Corp. It's more about corporate purpose and governance. A B Corp legally commits to pursuing both profit and a specified public benefit, like environmental sustainability or community support.
So it changes the director's duties.
Exactly. It legally requires directors to consider the impact of their decisions, not just on shareholders, but on other stakeholders too, employees, community, environment. It's a way to embed social mission into the corporate DNA. But for tax purposes, a B Corp still elects to be taxed as either a C Corp or an S Corp.
Okay, wow. We've covered a lot of ground: liability, taxes, structure, fundraising. Now let's bring it all together. For the listener trying to make this choice right now, what are the key strategic questions they need to wrestle with? Maybe four core questions.
Yeah, let's frame it that way. Four key areas to analyze for your specific situation. First, what's your risk profile? Be honest. Are you in a business inherently prone to lawsuits, construction, food service, anything involving public interaction or safety?
Or even just, do you have significant personal assets you absolutely cannot afford to lose? Your house, your retirement savings.
Exactly. If the answer to either of those is a strong yes, the needle really swings hard towards incorporating for that liability shield. Mm-hmm. Partnership risk might just be too high.
Okay, question one, risk. What's number two?
Second, growth ambitions and capital needs. Where do you realistically see this business going? Is the plan modest? Maybe a lifestyle business? Or are you shooting for the stars? Do you anticipate needing significant outside equity funding from angel investors or venture capitalists?
And if the answer is yes, you need that outside equity.
Then a corporation, almost certainly a C Corp eventually, is practically mandatory. We talked about why investors need stock, clear structure, scalability. Trying to raise VC funding as a partnership is generally a non-starter.
Right. Okay. Third question.
Third, your tax situation and projections. This requires some forecasting. Are you expecting losses in the first year or two? If so, the pass-through taxation of a partnership or S-Corp could be valuable, letting you deduct those losses against other income.
Or conversely.
Conversely, are you expecting to be highly profitable fairly quickly, and you plan to reinvest most of those profits back into the business rather than taking them out personally? In that case, the C-Corp's potentially lower flat tax rate, that 21%, might actually be more advantageous than your personal income tax rate, which could be much higher. But if you plan to distribute profits regularly, that double taxation bites.
So tax requires looking at both profitability and your plans for the cash. Got it. And the last question.
Finally, number four, simplicity versus structure. What do you value more day to day? Do you prioritize operational flexibility, low setup costs, minimal red tape, and quick decision-making? That leans towards partnership or maybe an LLC? Or do you need or prefer the clear governance rules, the mandated oversight, the inherent stability, and the perceived legitimacy that comes with a corporate structure, even if it means more administrative hassle and cost?
Risk, growth capital, tax, simplicity, structure, those seem like the core trade-offs.
They really are. And answering them honestly, based on your specific venture, gets you most of the way there. But there's a warning I always give.
Let me guess. Don't just pick the easy option now thinking you'll fix it later.
Exactly. It's the conversion trap. So many entrepreneurs think, oh, I'll just start as a simple partnership or LLC because it's easy and cheap. And then when I get investor interest, I'll just convert to a C-Corp.
Sounds logical, but not so simple.
Not simple, not fast, and definitely not cheap. Converting a legal entity involves complex legal and tax maneuvering. You have to transfer assets, contracts, potentially deal with valuation issues. It's a significant undertaking. You're easily looking at 1 to 3 months of lawyers and accountants time.
And the cost?
It varies wildly, but you could easily spend anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000, sometimes significantly more, just on the legal and accounting fees for that conversion. Money and time you'd rather be spending on growing the actual business.
Ouch. So the advice is, if significant growth and outside funding are genuinely part of the plan, even if it's down the road,
start structured for it. Seriously, consider starting as a corporation from the beginning, likely an S-Corp initially if you qualify, that can more easily convert to a C-Corp later if needed, or just start as a C-Corp if VC funding is the immediate goal. Don't create a costly headache for your future self.
Good advice. And let's quickly recap those common mistakes people make within each structure for partnerships.
The biggest mistake by far is operating, especially a general partnership, without a comprehensive, well-drafted, written partnership agreement. When disagreements happen, and they inevitably do, over money, direction, workload, having no clear rules spells disaster. Deadlock, lawsuits, messy breakups, get it in writing.
And for corporations, we keep coming back to it.
Failing to maintain those corporate formalities, piercing the corporate veil, commingling funds is the classic, but also just sloppy record keeping, not holding meetings, not documenting decisions. You pay for the shield, you have to maintain the shield. Don't treat your corporation like a full proprietorship with fancy letters after its name.
All right, this has been incredibly clarifying. I think we've really unpacked the core differences. That central trade-off seems unavoidable, doesn't it? Partnerships give you that speed, flexibility, tax simplicity maybe, but you're exposed personally and raising big money is tough.
Right.
Corporations, on the other hand, demand more effort, more paperwork, potential tax complexity with C-Corp, but they deliver that crucial liability shield and the toolkit for serious scale and investment.
That's the fundamental exchange. And because the best choice really hinges on so many specific factors, your state's laws, your personal financial situation, your industry risk, your profit projections, your ultimate goals, our final guidance has to be this. Use this discussion to understand the landscape and formulate the right questions.
But don't stop here.
Absolutely not. You must sit down with qualified professionals, a business attorney, and a CPA who understand your specific situation. They can help model the tax outcomes, assess the liability risks accurately, and ensure you choose the foundation that truly fits your business, not just a generic template. Please don't rely solely on blog posts or, well, even podcasts for this big a decision.
Sound advice. Okay, as we wrap up, let's leave our listeners with a final thought. We've talked a lot about legal structures, but think about the implication of these structures for business longevity. The traditional partnership, it was often tied so directly to the lives of the partners themselves, right? If a partner left or died, the entity often dissolved.
Historically, yes. Very fragile in that sense.
Now, contrast that with the corporation. This invention, this legal person, designed for perpetual existence. It can outlive its founders, its shareholders, everyone. Just ponder for a moment how that single legal innovation, the ability to create an entity separate from any individual human lifespan, completely changed the game for commerce, for building wealth, for creating lasting institutions and legacies that can span generations.
It's a powerful concept. The enduring nature of the corporate form really did reshape the economic world. A fascinating thought to end on. Thanks for this deep dive.
Thank you. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.